Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. In this episode, I talk to Lottie Child, who has devised street training, in which adults and young people learn how to be more playful in our streets. Street training has also helped the Metropolitan Police have a better understanding of young people's desire to play.
So I'm an artist, and I graduated from art school in 2000, and it was around that time I was thinking about what could I make that would activate people's creativity. I was interested in art that wasn't about me expressing myself, but about me activating what other people did and facilitating that. So what I do is around behaviour in public space and play. Everything I do is a kind of, I call it participatory performance art. So it actually takes the form of kind of adventures around the streets, of doing a circuit, interacting with the environment playfully, and helping people to find what playful things they want to do as we move through the streets. And it's often inspired by or instructed by children or teenagers, because I found that they have a particular way of reading the environment that's always looking for what's in it for them in terms of play and boundary pushing creativity. So those are the kind of keys to the way I like to engage with the environment and encourage other people to do that with me.
Were you a child that played in the street yourself, or were you a child who didn't play in the street and now wants to play in the street?
Yeah, I think it might have been a reaction to, I grew up in a really suburban area where there wasn't any play in the streets. People wouldn't come and knock on the door and say, are you coming out to play? We did a little bit, but it was all kind of organised. So it was nice to think about the street again as a place for play as an adult, because I didn't do that as a child. And I think there's something about taking ownership of the street by the ways we use it, and feeling that there was more opportunity to have more relationship with place by actually engaging with a place. I think we make a more deeper relationship with it, but also enrich it. Thinking about how we connect with where we live and how we can change it was something I was thinking about.
Okay, so that's pretty unusual for someone out of art school to sort of come up with these sorts of ideas. And yet, not only did you come up with the idea, but you kind of stuck to it.
Yeah.
Or have you actually disappeared off and diverted off and tried other things?
No, it's been really consistent. I mean, the course was a really lovely course called Critical Fine Art Practice at St. Martin's. And it was, for me, the major message in the course was that art affects society and society affects art. And there's this dialogue that you can activate. And my tutors would always be saying, could you do that as a performance? And it stuck at the college. I was thinking, no, I don't know how to do this as a performance. What can I do that's actually me in real space, in real time, doing something? But I was really intrigued by that idea. And I love the idea that you can't really buy and sell that. How do I draw people's attention to what's happening now and enjoy their experience and be conscious of their experience, as opposed to making a product or getting involved in a market? And that was really, that's something that I learned at college. So it seemed quite natural. And there just seemed a lot of people talking about the city, you know, around the time that I graduated, there was a real fashion for questions about the relationship between art and architecture. And I came across Muff, who was really interested in some of the ways that they were shaping public space. And I was also learning about situationists and psychogeography. And well, some artists took me urban climbing when I first graduated. Went out climbing buildings and I was thinking, oh, this is a bit dangerous, it's a bit dirty, it's probably a bit illegal. But actually, I really enjoyed it. So I established a climbing club. I used to take people climbing in the City of London on Sundays on the banks and churches. And one of the things I learned was that, you know, psychogeography says our environment really affects the way we think, the way we feel, who we become. The city conditions us. And, you know, Guy Debord saying the city conditions us to become very linear and to be consumers and producers. And I felt that, yes, and we're affecting the city. You know, we'd be very playful and frivolous, and I'd say you don't need to be fit and sporty. You can come with a hangover, you can be wearing a dress, high heels, have a kid with a tummy ache. It's not about being macho or being skilled. So people were playing, affecting their own experience of the city, having a real experience of the city. It's memorable and exciting. And so I thought, it's such a feedback loop, actually. That helped me understand a little bit more about performance, maybe. And there's a theorist called Jen Harvey, based at Queen Mary, who writes about performativity, that when we see the way other people behave, it influences us. It could be a kind of acting, it could be a choice to behave that way, or it could not be. but it does affect the way people act.
Have others asked you or suggested that you're like a street performer?
The best way to describe what we're doing is performance. And also, I don't really know what performance is. I think it's a thing that to come continually questioning. I mean, street performance, I would think about juggling, busking, and all the other really brilliant, creative, kind of quite free things that they're often people, I mean, sometimes they're people who are not schooled, and then people just come and do something in the street. And I really like and respect that, and I think that's lots of free creativity going on the streets. So I kind of identify with that kind of street performance. Yeah, but I couldn't put myself in that category very easily because it takes ages to explain what I'm doing.
So you've explained where it may have come from, a little bit influenced by the urban climbing,
yeah,
a little bit influenced by street performance. So try and explain what happens on street training.
Different things happen in different cities, but a classic scenario might be, well, I'll be walking around here day to day, and I'll notice this handrail's really nice for sliding down. And I'll think, I'd like to try, because I've seen somebody somewhere in a photograph riding the handrail of the escalator, laying down their body on the handrail of the escalator. Or I think, oh, there's a really weird little crack in that building. Maybe there's something hidden in there. Can I jump from this place to this place? Are these fruit edible in this churchyard? Just exploring, finding, so having these little interactions myself.
More than just parkour?
I'm very inspired, very interested in parkour. And I didn't know about parkour when I first started urban climbing. I guess they were kind of happening. Parkour's a very intelligent, refined, and really wonderful thing. And so I take, you know, sometimes I work with people who do parkour and I've been taught and encourage and include and get involved with what they do. There are things that people do that interact with their environment, you know, just maybe imagining what other people are thinking. It's a very difficult thing to define. It's like, I do what I feel like doing, and then I'll get a group of people together and I'll teach them, and I'll say in a kind of, it's like a fake pseudo martial art type of way, hi, welcome to your street training session, in a sort of, this is a sport, let's get ready, and then demonstrate these techniques and give it this sort of seriousness. One of them often will start in Liverpool Street as body surfing. So you run and you lay down your body on the shiny surface of the floor and you slide. And I was taught that by a student who said, yeah, we get drunk and go to football and then we slide in Victoria Station. It's a bit dangerous and it's a bit dodgy. And so all these different things that people are doing, I'm either picking them up and laying them and teaching them. That's what I was starting to do. So those would be a circuit. And obviously people notice really quickly, that you could do anything, this is silly. You know, the things that she's demonstrating aren't serious skills. They're silly, they're really whimsical, they're really personal. So they think, oh, what am I gonna do?
Do you bring on that persona when you're the street trainer?
Something that I've had reflected back to me a lot by participants is there's a really big difference of being in a group and being on your own. Everyone's got their thing that they do. Some things are really subtle and some things are really elaborate. So, you know, being drunk and sliding across the floor or whatever. Most people aren't going to do that. But I like these ideas as a lab, that you might try something and then you might do it on your own. There's such a strong culture to conform. Everybody's looking.
There's structure to conform, but there's also fear and perception of risk.
Yeah, I think the fear of looking like a twat is much bigger than the fear of hurting yourself. I mean, it's a really, really strong culture of conformism. And we're always policing each other. Don't do anything that's a bit weird or silly. And then we're really policing ourselves. And that's the thing that I found through these sessions, this urban climbing and then calling it street training, is that as soon as we do something, it could be quite innocuous, we react ourselves and other people react and police us. And that's the most brilliant kind of lesson and demonstration for what a narrow, limited set of behaviours we're all repeating and getting used to and teaching each other in the city. And then I really key into that De Boer idea that we are conditioned to behave in a certain way. And
many of the interactions are non-verbal.
Yeah.
And many of them are touchy-feely. So, you do get people to touch each other.
One night I did a session for performers. So the people that came along soon got the idea that they could do their own thing.
Yeah.
Often there'll be a rhythm. So you'd get involved with doing something. And then when that's resolved, you go ahead and you find somebody who's already involved with doing something else and you join in with them. And there were people standing next to each other on Bishopsgate going, oh, wow, that's really lovely. So I joined in and they were just watching the last of the sunset, really beautiful pink sunset really warming down this alley. And it was just after work, so guys in suits were walking around. And we encouraged some people to come and stand with us as well. And just stood there quietly with the sun shining on us. And then a little way up there were some already people squeezing into a phone box, seeing how many people can get in the phone box. And going to guys, come on, get in. And they were really keen to do. And I think about an hour previous, they would have been like, God, time wasters. What are they, get a job? And now they were really keen to rub up against strangers and get into a phone box and have an experience.
And you're not dressed in any uniform, or do you wear something that says, I'm a street trainer?
Well, I mean, the reason that I started to use the word street training was because quite a long time ago, a group of us started the University of Openness. And we said, we're starting university now, and we're inspired by free universities like Joseph Beuys, but particularly at the time, Jakob Jakobsen and Henrietta Heiss at the Copenhagen Free University. So I was thinking, what about the Faculty of Physical Education? Because that would always be peripheral in the conventional university, but actually, what if we say the body is the centre of making sense of everything? And then I got interested in the idea of kinesthetic learning. If you're making sense of the world with your body in space, that could be a way that's not very intellectual. But very intelligent. There's a kind of intelligence that I didn't understand very much, and that from my education at art school hadn't been really valued. So I was thinking about that, and then I met a friend's godson who was 7 at the time, and he was talking to me at a party with his whole body and demonstrating things. I was like, this is the best teacher this guy knows. So he showed me all these different ways of getting downstairs, and I was like, okay, I have to apprentice myself to this child. And so then we made a street training video. He's talking to the camera, and he took me to his housing estate in Marylebone to show me how to engage with it. It's a completely grey, boring place. There's no play equipment at all. And he made up things like Air Blade and the spinning pig's tail and really funny things. And I realised that a better word for it would be street training, and that there are so many more things than urban climbing that we could do. So then learning from children became a kind of central activity. So that I was carrying on doing street training. I was getting invited by galleries in different countries to come and do performances and workshops and getting the odd grant here and there. But I'd still be doing climbing and training around the city. And what I noticed is that black or Asian guys, or just guys sometimes, would get the police coming up and giving them a hard time. Whereas I would have a certain, I decided, you know, at the beginning I'd have a certain demeanour with authority. So explain exactly what I'm doing, be really like upfront with as much information as possible, but be feminine and be gentle and keep moving as fast as possible. And often I'd wear a dress when I was doing it. So I was thinking, these are different standards for different people. And I don't want to keep quiet about it but I don't know what I can do about this. So at least I can just think. So someone would get an antisocial behaviour order for the same behaviour that I would get in international art residency. Same behaviour. Same place, different person. So then I went to the South London Gallery to talk to Francis Williams, who's the head of education there, about 3 years ago. And I said, I want to put together a street training team from the young people who live on the housing estate behind the gallery and train people with them. We got yellow hoodies. We got street training hoodies for them. So over the years, we managed to get the local police to come and get trained. And they used the first time they came in uniform, and it looked really good with the yellow hoodies and the blue uniforms. And you know, we play and we try out different things, and some of them are whimsical and some of them are risky and some of them are skillful. And it's really interesting to put the young person in the role of leader. The gallery endorses it. I do a little PowerPoint presentation about, look, this has been happening in different countries and it's backed up with theory and it's worth doing. And the police are like, oh God. And then at the beginning, they all stand up and look really grumpy and uncomfortable. And it's really amazing how kind and gentle, and the kids are trying too much to give information and be helpful. This is not the kind of dynamic that these two groups have ever experienced before. So the police being reticent and the kids going, come on, try, this is how you do it, this is how you do that. And after a while, the dynamic changes. But one of the first activities I get them to do is to lead each other blind. So the police have to close their eyes and trust the young people. And they touch each other really gently. That was one of the most interesting things. They're gently guiding each other and really falling into a completely different mindset. And then the young people have to trust the police. And that's the same kind of thing. It's a circuit. And then we always sit around at the end of a street training session in a circle. And now we kind of tell the story about what happened. It becomes a story, narrative. And then with the police, we ask questions, so how will you do your job differently as a result of having had this experience? But the reason they come is it's tick box, it's about community engagement, it's something they really have to do. So on that housing estate, I think the benefit has been the young people and the police know each other, so they don't distrust each other, because these kids have been incredibly kind and incredibly eloquent and knowledgeable and hosted them. So there's a difference. But a lot of the police say, one guy said, when we get a call about antisocial behaviour, we're already hyped up, we're already expecting a fight. So we don't ask questions, we don't come in trying to find out what's going on. So it's great to see that they're saying that, and the kids know that, that's the kind of thing they experience. Perhaps the police realise that they can see a bit more detail in the situation. And one of the examples was climbing on the roof of a garage. There was a lot of discussion about should that ever happen, because it could be really dangerous, it might not have a secure roof. But that's one of the things that we do. And I think we find out about the ability of our own bodies. We key into the intelligence of the group. Different people are helping and guiding and making suggestions and making warnings. And we also find out whether the roof is safe or not. If we're not going there, we're not trying all these things, we don't know. We prove quite a lot of things by going out and testing it and taking that risk and doing the thing. But a lot of people think you should never do any of that.
I was going to say, you're well up into urban trespass, aren't you?
It's just breaking really rigid social codes. There's nothing illegal or anything about it. It's just sort of, it feels extreme because we're all trying to be normal.
Yeah. Is this street training just confined to the street, or is this something that you could do in parks or even in the countryside?
Yeah. Yeah, it's about connecting with your environment and having a reciprocal relationship with it and seeing how the environment affects you and how you affect the environment. So I think that it's a good thing to practice in parks and in nature.
And have you tried it in those situations?
Yeah, asking kids about how to connect with the things around them, like learning that wild carrot flowers are nice to pat, just similar reactions but with trees and plants. And I wonder if the nature feels a positive reaction to our positive reactions to that. So maybe there's more reciprocity with nature and our behaviours than there is with the city. I'm not sure.
When you're working with people, that you, if you bring them out of the street, their behaviour changes radically if they're in green space compared to when they're in the street?
Or... Yeah, I think people feel really different in a park or an open space than they do in a dark alley. It's really good for people to be surrounded by and connecting with nature, because I think that we get more about that sense of connecting. It's easier to connect with the nature around us than with the concrete.
Someone listens to this podcast and they want to get involved and do street training. Can they sign up and come along and do it?
Yeah, the website, streettraining.org, is one way to find out what's going on, and it's updated with all the events that happen. The events usually happen, they're either part of a festival or part of a gallery or...
And are they events that you've organised, or do you let it out to the world and say anyone can run a street training event?
The idea is that young people start running these groups and ideally get paid for this behaviour that they would otherwise be kind of persecuted. Actually, it seems valuable. And the idea is maybe that could be a social enterprise.
What I ask everybody is can they recommend a place to walk or play, or suggest a street trading type of performance that they should try themselves?
The City of London's wonderful in that it's got such a clear, strong culture anyway. So anything playful you do there is quite instructive, because you might be asked by a police officer what you're doing, and they immediately puts it into contrast. What are you meant to be doing? Who should be doing what, where? So if you start off at Liverpool Street Station, I think it's worth trying to ride the handrail of the escalator. So you just lay down on it instead of putting your hand on it. You start at the bottom and you just let it roll you up on the handrail.
I think that's going to be a tough objective for anyone
as a starter.
Is there a more simple list?
And then the city's full of wonderful architectural features that are good for climbing. Some of them, it's called rustication. It's got these great slabs of stone on the front that are a bit like ladders. You can just fit your hands and your feet in between. So just seeing if there's any, how high you want to go, anything like that. So yeah, just around Liverpool Street.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities in London. In this episode, you've heard from Lottie Child. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we'd love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited. Our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of EZ Tronic.